Linoleum knife.
Yep. Yes, it is. Are your headphones too loud or not loud? Okay, hang on. Let's...
What do we need to do?
Our guest is going deaf. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Welcome to Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
The microphone was hitting the cookies. I played that.
There's so many things happening here.
Well, I was trying to point the mic at the speakers on the cassette player and...
Rest assured, there will be no cookies eaten during this program.
No. I just had two... I don't go to Trader Joe's.
Why ever. Don't you go to Trader Joe's?
It's not convenient. There are two grocery stores in our neighborhood and actually there are three. One of them is Trader Joe's, but Trader Joe's is the least convenient.
And their organic section is kind of meh.
Yeah, not a fan.
But they have specific products that
specific
are
products that I'm into.
I like their minty fake Oreos at the holiday
which is
time.
What I'm holding in my hand right here.
But no, not just any version, though.
These are the dark chocolate-covered peppermint JoJo's.
Yes.
They've got a little peppermint on top.
I never knew these existed, and Gary Cotti showed up with two boxes of them, and it was like...
And you...
And I scarfed one by myself, not having any
more. An entire box all by yourself.
Yes, in one sitting.
How long did it take you to eat them?
Less than 20 minutes, probably. I was watching some holiday special or other and just went into a childhood reverie.
Probably the King family. You were getting all hopped up.
No, it was something of the Rankin-Bass family. It might have been Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Mm. Did you just introduce yourself?
We haven't gotten there yet, but let's do that now.
Oh.
I'm Alonzo Duralde. I'm film reviews editor for The Wrap and a film critic for What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. You are Dave White, film critic for Movies.com.
That's, yes.
And joining us today is someone with such an arm-long list of credits that I'm going to just leave them to her. But I'm thrilled that she's one of my colleagues at The Wrap, but she can also be read at The Village Voice and Los Angeles Times and IndieWire and heaven knows where else. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ingu Kang.
Kang the Merciless.
That is actually my bedroom name. So.
Okay. We'll leave that as a special private time thing.
I hear you are a Stalinist as well.
Why wouldn't I be?
Moving a little closer.
It turns out that you were called a Stalinist by the same man
who flipped out about
LA Film Critics having lunch last week. Is your microphone being weird?
No, I think it's fine, right?
Okay. That's good. And we're not going to even say his name again this week because he doesn't really deserve this much publicity.
I've now decided that he's my new favorite dude. Like, I don't know him at all, like I said last week, but...
Is this in the way that you like watching those Pat Robertson videos online?
Yes.
I see.
I'm into...
Unfettered crazy?
I'm into people who make wild pronouncements about stuff, and he's now... I'm into it. I'm down with that dude.
All right.
His name is...
Oh, stop it.
I just said the name. I
mean, okay, maybe someone else. You can only get it like four more times, and then he will.
Yeah, it's like Candyman.
Yeah.
Say his name five times.
Allegedly.
No, I just think it's funny. If anybody else wants to go read some wild stuff on the internet, you should go to his column, apparently. I mean, I honestly haven't read anything since
Lunchgate.
And I only know that you were called a Stalinist because Alonzo told me. Because of your review of a new movie.
That we haven't seen yet.
That I haven't seen yet. What's it called? Black and White? Or Black?
Black or White.
Or White. It's called Black or White?
Yes, it's called Black or White.
Okay.
It's one of these things where he's like, well, I'm less PC than you, so look how cool I am with my leather jacket and like my cigarette. It's one of those things, and... You know, whatever. If you want to be like an old white man who is like bitching about how everyone is too PC for him, like, go have fun doing that.
It's time that white men finally got their voice heard in this world of ours. The poor dears.
We are also very happy to have you in our home at Christmas time so that you can be given these cookies and look at our tree. What do you think of our Christmas tree? How great is it?
I am actually
on a scale of one to the best one you've ever seen in your entire life.
I'm actually too distracted by all of the wine bottles to actually look at your Christmas tree.
Here's the grift.
People, you throw
have
a party,
Christmas party.
And people, and you don't, even if you say you don't need to bring anything,
they're going
to
bring you a nice bottle of fancy red wine.
People show up with a bottle of wine. Because if you were raised right, you don't show up anywhere empty handed. So, right. You know. What did you bring with you today? Oh, never mind. But no, so yeah, so a lot of people show up with bottles of red wine, so now we have, like, if we had a cellar, we'd, start stocking it.
There's only, like, 10 bottles. Nothing's going to get stocked.
No.
It's going to get drunk.
Is that tree real?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, look, there's, like, a Pee Wee Herman ornament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's an old...
We like to make sure that it's the tree is much too big for the apartment.
Yes.
I think it's actually just right. And I also like how Pee Wee Herman takes a place where the star would be.
He's our star.
There would be... There is the star right next to Pee Wee, but the only reason there is no one thing on top is because the top is smashed into the ceiling and nothing can actually be up on that top.
Right.
So other than Pee Wee Herman, who would you put at the top of your Christmas tree?
Well, we had the Spice Girls a couple of years.
Yeah.
The first set of dolls before the tour ones came out.
We kind of rotate things around. You know, we've got too many. We've got like four giant bins of Christmas ornaments. So sometimes stuff gets rotated in and out. We're obsessed.
I recently learned your favorite Spice Girls.
Yes.
On the show, did we talk about that?
I think we
had this discussion in person.
Yes. Oh, that's right. That's yes. right.
So I know Alonzo's, and I guess correctly, is Ginger.
Correct, yes.
Oh, I forget. Yours is Baby, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And yours?
Mine is probably Scary.
Okay.
I think...
It's because you're PC.
In terms of singing, I like Baby and I like Sporty.
The best voices.
In terms of who I love the most, though, it's Posh. And I love Posh because she's like the best representative for Los Angeles civic pride, I think, of anyone who lives here.
Explain.
She voluntarily moved here.
Mm-hmm.
She started a fashion line. She's seen in public eating tiny amounts of food on plates. She never goes anywhere looking completely... She never goes anywhere unless she looks completely turned out.
Right.
She's got David Beckham wrapped around her finger.
Mm.
And...
Or at least, I don't know.
What?
If anybody has an arrangement,
Do you doubt their love?
Why
do you doubt love?
I don't.
I don't think doubt their love to know that, like... They're probably in some like Angie.
There's some don't ask, don't tell going on there, I think, or
what?
Something.
Evidence, please.
No, he's David Beckham.
Yeah, so
you can't tell me that all those pheromones are going to one lady.
Who do you think has sharper cheekbones, her or him?
Oh, Romeo. Have you seen his Burberry layout? Their oldest son Romeo is a Burberry model now.
We just learned this today.
And you look at that the head of this kid, and he is like so the melding of those two cheekbones.
Yeah.
Those four cheekbones.
He's
going to
like cut himself on the face.
Exactly. Yeah.
If they have an arrangement, it's a glamorous one.
No doubt. Yes.
And that is important.
Yes.
And so. They make living in Los Angeles a better experience for all of us. We're all lucky to have them here.
Do you think they only have Burberry bed sheets?
Oh, Pratese.
What is that?
Or something even better.
That's like Pratese is like the crazy expensive,
right?
10,000 thread count.
That's the rich people's sheets.
Yeah.
Is it like not made from cotton even? Just like
no, it is. It's just made from. It's made from the kind of cotton that no one else is allowed to touch in the world.
It's the cotton they grow on the moon that only special rich people get to have. I've walked by their store and felt like I can't afford to be on this sidewalk.
Okay, speaking of the moon.
Yes.
Ingo and I, yesterday, were both at the same screening of Annie.
Mm, which we'll be talking about later.
We'll talk about it next week. But I do want to talk about one thing right now.
Okay.
The bit in the middle where the Annie gets to go with Jamie Foxx to the movie premiere of Moonquake Love or whatever the thing is called, or Moonquake Island or whatever the movie is called. And it's a Twilight kind of film where...
Twilight Avatar.
The girl has... The girl... The girl cries moon tears. I genuinely laughed at that. The fact that it was directed by Lorden Miller.
Yes, that was the best joke.
That was the best joke in the movie.
Wait, who's Lorden Miller? Oh, Lord and Miller. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lord and Christopher Miller.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that that was Ashton Kutcher in that little, like, movie within the movie?
It was?
Yes.
I didn't even recognize
it. It was Mila Kunis and it was Ashton
I knew it was
Kutcher.
Mila Kunis. I didn't recognize
Ashton
Kutcher.
Well, yeah,
Ashton
I mean, like,
Kutcher.
Who's going to forget her face? Yeah. But...
That's hilarious. I didn't recognize him at all.
No, I thought it was like a woman initially.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. I,
no, it might have been. It was called Moonquake after all.
Well, while y'all were watching Annie, I had to go see Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb.
Things are great for all of us.
Oh, December.
So, okay, let's begin discussing this week's current cinema.
Let's. Why don't you guys start with top five, which I have not seen, but y'all have.
Would you like to tell what happens in top five, Ingo?
Okay. So top five is sort of this like romantic comedy that happens over the course of a day or so. And it's Chris Rock playing a kind of Chris Rock character whose career is a little bit more in the... Imagine if like you had Chris Rock, but he only ever starred in grown-up movies.
Yeah.
The Adam Sandler, and then he made like four of them, which actually he might, but whatever. And he is engaged to be married, but he's engaged to be married to a Bravo reality star played by Gabrielle Union, who is, by the way, wearing a fantastic...
Everything all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. But the Chris Rock character is really enamored with a New York Times journalist who was interviewing for his newest movie, and she's played by Rosario Dawson, who is, of course, Luminous and also has, like, a Skrillet haircut that I think actually might bring the Skrillet haircut back, even though we all thought it should die like this.
And it looks good on no one but Rosario Dawson. Right?
Well, I mean, that's what she looks like, so really.
Yeah. Mm. And she looks like that in person, too.
Ah.
Yeah. She was at the screening that I was at doing a Q&A. And I left before the Q&A.
You fool.
Out of journalistic integrity. In spite of, and the listeners know this, my insane crush on Rosario Dawson.
It's true.
I could not stand the thought of sitting there listening to her talk about the film and have it influence me. Just because I
Because you'd go home and write, this is the best movie ever, because Rosario Dawson talked about it.
Yeah, pretty lady. Yeah, it's... I have a weird... I mean, I'm straight up homo, but I love Rosario Dawson so much. So,
not even Rent could quell
you. Not even Rent could ruin that for me.
And she's so good and she's so beautiful in this. And so, basically, they walk around New York City, mostly. They sort of, like, walk around the East Village. If you have been there, you can totally, like, you know, recognize certain blocks. And then they also take a trip down to, was it Harlem, where he grew up? Sorry, it was either Harlem or it was Queens.
Like Brooklyn or Queens.
Oh, you know what? It probably was Brooklyn because Chris Rock. Yeah, that show about growing up.
Oh, Everybody Hates Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, someplace that like rich people don't want to be. That's where he's from. That's where his character is from.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically you figure out pretty much straight away that they're going to get together, but it's sort of about like watching these two people figure out like what they like about each other and what they don't quite like about the current people that they're with.
Mm-hmm.
And also Chris Rock sort of has this like very adversarial, sorry, Chris Rock's character has this very adversarial relationship to journalists in general, and especially this one New York Times
and
film
critic, yeah,
who has been trashing its movies. And I think like one of the reviews was something like, "I wouldn't watch this movie if it was like in my glasses," which doesn't even make sense, and I don't think would like fit the New York Times. I mean, if it was like written by
that's
Alice
a blog
Stanley.
Post,
yeah, New York Post, maybe. Yeah.
So they walk around.
That's like
town.
Something I would say.
And they sort of like figure out who, you know, each other are. They both apparently are former alcoholics. And so they definitely bond over that. And it's just sort of Chris Rock's character talking about how he came to be to the place where he is, where he's making this movie called Uprise, which sort of seems like Django Unchained, but like way worse somehow. Where he's speaking in French because it's about the Haitian Revolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chris Rock is not wanting to speak French as his character. So it's a lot of like observations about comedy and movie stardom, and I don't know. It was a very good movie that didn't, I think, quite work for me. And I feel almost bad saying that because this movie has been so universally beloved. Mm-hmm. But there were parts where it just like felt really uncomfortable.
Except for James Rocky at the rap, who is not.
Yeah, no, you and James agree. He didn't like it either.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he says it's funny, but that it's just that it's kind of sloppy and gets things wrong. Like, you know, Chris Rock knows well and good that you don't have a press junket for your movie on the day it opens.
Correct.
You know? And that just that there's a lot of sort of shortcuts in the writing that he didn't like.
It does defiantly, stubbornly get journalism entirely wrong. In that it makes Rosario Dawson's character sort of every bad journalist rolled into one, lacking judgment and ethics and even according to the quotes of the, you know, stuff that come up, even writing ability. And so it's a weird, you know, and apparently she writes for the New York Times. Well, you know, we know a couple of people who write for the New York Times, and I can tell you how rigorous that place is with their journalists, or at least with their film critics and entertainment journalists.
Yeah.
The stories that I get, you know, of, you know, oh, I had to rewrite this thing three times, you know, like, I couldn't say it this way. I have to say it another way. I needed to change this other thing. You know, it's not an internet, you know, fan website.
Right.
You know, so
more or less thin skinned than Birdman.
Ooh.
Approximately the same, really, because it. I mean, that's how I read it. I mean, it assumes that journalists are petty and out to get you.
Except, and this is not an observation that I came with on my own, I saw it somewhere else, but I think it's very interesting that you find out, she has several hidden agendas when she's interviewing this guy, but one of them, which you find out pretty early on, is to sort of like rescue him from himself.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of interviewer goes in being like, oh, I'm going to save this actor from his terrible career?
No.
Oh, all the time.
So that part of it is really weird and wrong-headed.
Yeah.
However, I thought this movie was so damn funny that everything else about it absolutely won me. And in spite of the fact that Rosario Dawson's character is not a human being that you would find on Earth outside of, you know,
like this one.
The worst of the junket press.
Ah.
You know, she's so charming and winning that you're down for her in some weird way. Anyway,
you're definitely down for her.
Always.
So wait, she is on the one hand like this terrible at her job and like with all these hidden agendas, and she's the love interest.
Yeah.
Well, you don't find out that she's quite so terrible at her job until there's this like big
reveal.
There's
some revealing stuff.
Okay,
yeah. And then I think it's that point that a lot of the movie sort of falls apart if you care about how journalists are portrayed, which, yeah. like, let's be real, most people
don't.
Only journalists do.
Even, yeah. even I don't, honestly. I don't care. Like, let them think that we're, like, weird, badass, conniving, you know, machinating, you know.
They got the alcoholism part.
Anything to make us seem dangerous and unstable, I'm all for it.
What bugs me about this, that attitude, like, the, from Birdman and stuff like this, is that if we're so terrible, and if our opinions mean so little, then you don't get to enjoy a positive review either. You know, like, if you get a rave from somebody, then you have to slough that off, too, and be like, oh, what do they know? Those guys are idiots. Mm. But that's not how it works. If you get a positive review, it's like, oh, yay, great, thank you. I'm so vindicated and appreciated. But yeah, then when you don't like something, what are you, the hell with you?
Do you feel the, like, there's this, like, weird confluence this year of critic characters who are, I mean, like, across the board negative? There's, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, in top five, you have it in Birdman, and those are probably, like, the most, you know, yep. pertinent examples. But there's also the one in The Chef, and spoiler alert, the critic character in Chef just, like, stops being a critic and mm-hmm. becomes a chef instead, because that's what he wanted to do all along. Yeah.
That's my favorite. That is my favorite fake thing about, you know, you're only doing this
because you failed.
Because you failed
the thing itself.
At the thing itself.
You're almost as bad as a teacher.
Right.
And then there's also Mr. Turner, right? Where you have, like, art critic John Ruskin, who, hello, like, he created art criticism, and now, like, the only thing that anyone remembers him for is being this, like, I don't know, like...
He was mean to Turner. Yeah.
Yes, he was mean to Turner, and he also couldn't get over his, like, wife's vagina hair.
Okay.
Yeah, that's in a new movie next year called Effie Gray.
Oh, I think I heard about that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, brother.
So, anyway... The rest of top five, I believe, is really, really terrific. I laughed consistently, start to finish. There is so much funny stuff in here about identity and race and how people fit into the world of entertainment or they don't. How everyone has an agenda for, you know, the person in their midst who has become sort of extravagantly successful,
mm-hmm.
and what it feels like to be in the center of this fishbowl with everyone looking at you. It's much sweeter than Birdman on that account, on that front, and
the ending is also much less what the fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, we're a clean podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll just find out the time.
Yeah, I'll take it out later.
Yeah. But thank you for saying the F word, because we like our guests to speak freely. In spite of the stuff that's wrong,
mm-hmm.
absolutely wholeheartedly recommending this. It's loose and messy and has the feel of, you know, improvisation about it. There's a really, really funny exchange early on between Chris Rock and Kevin Hart about that word, the one that black people can say to each other and no one else is allowed to. And it resurfaces with some of the other characters, and that's funny too. Leslie Jones from Saturday Night Live, who's quickly becoming my new favorite person on Saturday Night Live, she's in it. She's got some funny moments. Sherry Shepherd and Tracy Morgan, you know, together again after 30 Rock. So it's got a lot of, there's really funny Jerry Seinfeld and Adam Sandler moments, who pops up, also Whoopi Goldberg. It's a huge cast, and
you're more into it, but even with your reservations, would you say people should check it out? Or
I really do think people should check it out. I just don't think it's as deserving of universal praise or, like, unqualified praise. Right. I think that the movie does have interesting things to say about race. And it's just, you know, I mean, I don't want to sound like a broken record on this, but it's just so so wonderfully nice to see.
All right, knock it off.
Characters of color in a movie. Are you going to take that whole part out?
No, no, no. I'm just going to start writing this down.
I just feel so comfortable in your home.
Please, that's how we want you to.
This is how we talk when the microphone's
off.
Oh,
totally, yeah. No, don't be fooled otherwise. There was one thing that James pointed
out.
And
we're weirdos for doing this, by the way. Everyone says so. But the fact that we are, I think, maybe the only people I know who consciously do a clean podcast. I'm committed to it now. Like,
yeah, no.
Every once in a while I waver. Every once in a while I waver on this subject and I think, what if we just like let it rip? What if we just were our absolute, you know, profane selves all the time? But I think every other word would be the F word if we did that, because I have no control. I have no control over the swears that come out of my mouth.
You know what you could do? Every time that you say the F word, you can just like add like a recording of a belt like over it.
The one thing that James pointed out that is a kind of that for me, it's not a deal breaker, but it is something that bugs me a lot in movies. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's a scene where they're in a comedy club or something, and there's his picture on the wall, and they've clearly just typewritten the character's name and taped it over where it says Chris Rock.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely true. You can tell, like, there's like this little piece of white tape over it, and it's like Andre, whatever his last name
Alan.
Is.
Alan, because this is his Stardust Memories. His last name is Alan.
Yeah. You know? So the, and it really is. It does have a very much in common with Stardust Memories, because one of the premises is that now that he is in recovery, he doesn't find himself funny anymore, and he wants to be taken seriously. And everyone around him is like, "How come you're not funny anymore?"
Uh-huh.
Like they do to Woody Allen.
We like the early funny ones.
We like the early funny ones. Yeah.
And I think that's like a really rich avenue in which to explore. You know, like this idea of like how much can I sort of like perform when I'm sober, and like, am I a different person when I drink alcohol? And does the alcohol give me the confidence to become a different kind of performer than I would be if I were sober? Like, all of these questions are so interesting, and then it doesn't really go anywhere. And that was one of the things I found most frustrating, because as much as, you know, Chris Rock has these riffs about race, there's also so much that's just like about show business or about sobriety, and it just didn't go as deeply as I had hoped, because you don't hear about these topics in other movies.
Sure.
My favorite bit, and this is where the title comes from, and this is the last I'll say about it before we move on to Exodus.
Yay.
The title comes from everyone in the movie at one point or another lists their favorite top five rappers. And so I saw it with our friend Ryan Downey last night. And so we were giving each other our lists afterwards. And here's mine. Number one, Rakim. Eric B. and Rakim. Mm-hmm. Ryan says this is the broccoli choice. I don't agree.
What's the broccoli choice?
The good for you choice. Yeah. I don't agree. I saw Eric B. and Rakim in the 80s perform, because I'm old.
And old school.
And it was amazing. And from that moment, I was number one fan, right. Rakim. Number two, Too Short, because this is California. Number three, Ghetto Boys, because I'm also from Texas. Number four, Public Enemy. Number five is a tie between Trina and Roxanne Shanté. Also, if I get a number six, LL Cool J's Radio album. That's his first album.
I don't have five.
I also have top five homophobic rappers. Because I am a gay. And because I am a gay and I do listen to homophobic rappers, I do have favorites. Number one, DMX, who's in the movie. Number two, Big Daddy Kane. Number three, KRS-One. Number four, Ice Cube, before we started making movies like Are We There Yet? Number five, all the dudes in Brand Nubian. Those are my top five homophobic rappers. I forgive you all. They ain't talking about me. That's a Chris Rock bit, actually, where there was a bit he did where he talks to a woman who loves hip hop, and he's like, aren't you upset that about the things these rappers say about women? They call you the B word, you know, and she says, he ain't talking about me. And that's how I feel about it. They're not talking about me. They would like me. I would be the gay they liked. See?
Uh-huh.
That's, I know this to be true.
Yeah.
Is it because you're butch?
No, it's because I'm awesome.
Because he would bake them things.
I bake them cookies. I made you some cookies.
DMX.
Hey, DMX, do you want some cookies? I made you some cookies.
I
bet he would say yeah.
I am a terrible person because I'm of the age that I should have embraced hip-hop early and often, and I never did.
Yeah, you were at the prime. You and I both were in our teenage years when hip-hop sort of came along,
like,
the late 70s, early 80s, when it sort of bubbled over and became a thing that everyone knew existed.
And I remember in college...
You like, and I were the prime age.
In college.
What happened
like,
to you?
We had the guy who would review, like, you know, Yo Bum Rush the Show and
right.
stuff. And I knew it was there, and I knew it was happening, but it just never spoke to me.
Aesthetically, like, it did not appeal.
Yeah, like, beyond, you know, beyond Rapper's Delight and White Lines, I was just not having it.
That's
it was,
fine.
It was never my
Listen,
thing.
You liked PM Dawn, and they are your number one,
there
right?
There you go. The Beastie Boys.
The yeah. Beastie Boys, yeah. That's your number two. You just have three more spots to fill. Ya Kid K of Technotronic. Perhaps that would be your number three.
Okay, about,
I'm going to help
how
you
How about
here.
Blood of Abraham and Consolidated?
Those don't count. You still have two more spots.
Freedom Williams.
Freedom Williams. If that's
you don't even know from CNC Music Factory.
Perhaps Young MC.
Yes, there we go.
Or Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock.
Or
Tone
Loc.
Tone Loc. See, you two, Alonzo Duralde, you have a top five.
The most embarrassing.
Yeah, you just crammed down his throat.
I need
those are like those embarrassing spouses top 40 help rappers each other. That we could think of.
Oh, okay.
When you're married, you help each other.
Now you're like you know you're East Coast and West Coast, Ingu, because you know,
no,
you lived in New York and now you're in San Francisco. So you're down with like the Oakland sound, right?
I grew up in L.A. We listen to Tupac Shakur every morning on
okay.
the school bus.
Oh, gosh. Perfect. There's a hilarious bit about what would have happened to Tupac had he lived in this film, too.
Poetic Justice 2?
Something else. I won't spoil it.
All right. Moving on.
Exodus.
Exodus.
Is colon, boring.
Colon. Gods and Kings.
Right.
Gods and Kings and Geese Fed Scurry.
Why don't you talk about what Exodus is about, Alonzo?
Sure.
Duralde.
Stop me if you've heard this one. Moses.
Stop.
Yes. You know exactly what happens in this movie. It's the Ten Commandments minus Ann Baxter, and who wants that?
Not me.
Yeah. This is such a... Did you see this or no?
I did not.
Oh, lucky you. It is such a stiff. It is such... you know, I mean, putting aside for a moment the fully deserved criticism that Ridley Scott's been getting for his whitey white cast and how he didn't want to cast Muhammad so and so from such and such.
Yay, white people!
Yeah, that's a quote.
A quote.
That's a quote from Mr. Scott.
Let that drop your jaw there Woo. For a second.
This movie's just dull. It is so. I think if you're gonna visit these kind of epic classic tales, especially epic classic tales that have been very memorably told on film, it is incumbent upon you to bring something new to the table, whether it's an attitude or a point of view of a from a character or from the filmmaker or whatever, or some angle, some bent. And this is just this again, in the most sort of stolid way possible.
There's some good eye makeup.
Oh, yeah. Joel Edgerton rocks the guyliner big time.
Nice bronzering
and
happening.
Lots of bronzering. And they make Sigourney Weaver look like a drag queen. She's...
Yeah.
And she looks... She spends the movie looking kind of stricken anyway, like... Like she, like literally right before the cameras rolled, somebody just went up and pushed her. You know, she's kind of looking at her. He's like, "What? What? I don't. What's happening?"
Who does she play?
Joel Edgerton's mother, Mrs. Farrow. She plays the wife of John Turturro, who's actually kind of having some fun with this. And of course, he dies way too early. But yeah, she has very few lines. She's supposed to sort of kind of be always scheming in the background, but she just looks baffled. And Aaron Paul is in it and has, I think, four words.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just sort of over, he's Moses' shoulder a lot.
He's gone in 60 seconds.
Yeah, thank you.
The, the effects are cool, the plagues are cool, the parting of the Red Sea is cool, the fighting is whatever.
Even the parting of the Red Sea, I was a little, eh. They do it in a more sort of...
The headdresses are pretty rad.
Plausibly realistic way, but I'll tell you, as far as like big giant fake walls of water, Interstellar really raised the bar.
Aside from actually being completely boring, there's a really sort of deep underlying problem with this film. To have a $200 million movie or whatever this cost, you need the butts and seats. You need all the butts and all the seats. You need the Christian butts and the Jew butts and the atheist butts and the believer butts and the all the butts, the young and the old butts. You need the Hindu butts. You need butts.
You need what?
Butts. And I said butts. And so...
I said hinders.
Hinders. You need all the hinders. To do that, in a world that is not like 1957, where consensus was reached... And if you weren't part of the consensus, you didn't have a voice to say anything about it.
Right.
Now that we don't have that consensus anymore, the sweeping white Christianity-ness of it all has to be minimized. And that is what happens here. Questions of the nature of God. Because honestly, that's the main character in this story. God controlling everybody. God... hardening the heart of the pharaohs and the, you know, making the everything bad happen so that the Israelites have to escape and, you know.
But nobody ever questions it. Like, you know, Moses is like, well, God says we got to do this, this, and this. And there's maybe few moments of people going, wait, what? Really? Yeah. Why? But then they just kind of go with it. And then later, you know, he and God are sort of having the
11-year-old boy that plays God.
Exactly. Yeah. The petulant British schoolboy are having a long chat up on Mount Sinai. And meanwhile, they're making a golden calf down there. But again, this is all just sort of in the margins and barely focused on and then swept past as we can go do another big thing.
The movie is only interested in its own action set pieces. It is not interested in why this stuff is happening.
Right.
It is not even interested in why Moses does this stuff other than because the 11-year-old boy God says so.
Right.
And it begs this, you know, question, you worship what? You have faith in this guy who's making you go, like, who's going to slaughter all the babies? Like, what?
Yeah, if you think Joseph Smith getting mystery gold tablets in a hat doesn't make sense, none of these make sense.
It is not interested in digging into that.
So
on any level.
So what does it do with that whole killing babies incident?
Kill the babies.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like it's another big scene to like everybody put, you know, like you see them, you know, they're bringing the lambs out, everybody doing the door and, you know, it's just another, it's another big moment, you know.
And I, unlike, I can't believe I'm about to do this, unlike some of the current crop of Christian movies that have an interest in
selling the product.
In selling the product and in making the Bible feel coherent. The old and the new.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow as one long narrative that all fits together as a grand design.
As opposed to say troll and troll
too. You gotta admire people who are trying to make the Old and New Testaments fit together. Because the Old Testament is crazy, and the New Testament is also
crazy,
but not as crazy as the Old Testament.
No.
And the ideas about God in the Old Testament are holy crap! Like what? Who is this? And B, why is he doing this stuff? And C, how come these women are now having sex with their father and they're, you know, selling children into slavery and, like, here's my daughter, angels, go ahead, rape her. Like, that's the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And so I almost actually sort of want to give a little credit to the new batch of Christian movies because they have an interest in sorting out this stuff, even though they've all done it completely horribly. Let me be clear.
But they're trying.
Somehow they're trying. And Well, I appreciate the try.
I was not the biggest fan of Noah, but I at least appreciate that he knows we know that story.
Yeah.
Or we know the sort of safe Hollywood version of that story. Yeah. So he went full on Old Testament crazy with
wacky,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, all right, I didn't love
mystical, fantastical, supernatural.
Exactly, yeah.
Talking rocks and, yeah.
I didn't love the movie, but I liked at least he was injecting a little Kabbalah, a little whatever was going on in that movie, you know, to try and mix it up. And I was dying for some in this version because this is so sort of just straightforward and such a snoozer.
Is there like a Bible, an Old Testament story that you would like to see on screen?
No. maybe the Book of Ruth.
You know. And actually with you, or like the whole Esther thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Something with women.
Let Rose Trochet make it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Would you rather see Quentin Tarantino's Bible stories or Lord and Miller's?
If Lord and Miller did it with all with Lego, maybe.
I would rather see Harmony Korine's Old Testament stories. That is what I would rather see.
Pedro Almodóvar. There we go.
Yeah. Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, Ridley Scott, I didn't see The Counselor. I know you were one of its partisans, right?
I really loved The Counselor.
The mostly hated movie, but there were a few critics I know that stood up for it. I thought that the director's cut, I think I made the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven a DVD pick on the show in the past. It's really great. And it is a big sort of historical movie that never feels stodgy, that actually kind of feels like it has this momentum behind it.
There's my DVD really pick good right storytelling. There, The Counselor.
Okay.
Did you miss The Counselor? You need to see The Counselor. That's what you need in your life.
And there's a director's cut.
Yeah. I don't know if the director's cut is good.
Oh, you only saw the theatrical
cut. I only saw the theatrical cut. Okay. Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
If you got both versions on the DVD, watch the one from the theatrical cut, because that's the one I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Bring it up with Dave White if you have problems with that.
You have a problem with The Counselor, you got a problem with me. We'll step outside and solve it.
Also opening this week...
Inherent Vice.
Inherent...
But only in, like, two cities.
Wait, were you just doing Edelweiss?
Yeah.
Inherent Vice. I like that. It'd be better if it started Rachel Vice.
If you live anywhere that's not New York or Los Angeles, you're out of luck for a few more weeks.
Yeah.
This does not open in the rest of the country until at least...
January,
maybe the beginning of February.
Oh, that late, really?
Yeah.
Because the trailer says just in time for Christmas, but I guess they just meant for us.
I think they just mean here. I mean, I will now look at Box Office Mojo.
Whatever. People
and find out the answer to that question, because I do want to tell everybody the right stuff.
Uh-huh. Except your wrong opinion.
Oh, did you know that the pyramid is expanding on 600 more screens this week?
Well,
lucky everyone.
Due to popular demand, I'm sure.
Would you rather have people see Exodus or the pyramid?
The pyramid is shorter.
Yes, the pyramid is shorter. Okay, so Inherent Vice opens on 5 screens nationwide this week.
Mm-hmm.
And then goes wider... on January 9th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie, which is always a thing to discuss.
Yes.
Based on a Thomas Pynchon novel. Is the first one that's been adapted to the screen?
That is my understanding.
Yeah.
The first and probably the last.
I suspect as much, yes. So it's kind of...
Why don't you let me...
Okay, have at it.
Explain... What's happening?
You do that.
Okay, so Joaquin Phoenix plays an exhausted, stoned private eye named Doc.
Doc Sportello.
Yeah. And his ex-girlfriend shows up, and she's dating a guy whose wife and lover are plotting to put him into a mental institution.
Whose wife and the wife's lover.
Yeah, his wife and the wife's lover. And so the ex-girlfriend, Shasta, is her name, and everybody in this movie has a Pynchon-esque crazy name. Japonica is one of the people's names. Sortilege.
Somebody named Wolfman.
Yeah. A guy named Bigfoot in this movie. That's the beginning of the mystery. And then it goes off the rails fairly quickly. Each scene introduces a new character and a new human wrinkle and a new human direction for this freaked out plot to unfold. But it doesn't unfold in a way that you can follow necessarily, even though it does sort of come back around and explain itself by the time the movie's over. By the time it does that, you will be confused. And I think it's because confusion here is not just the method, it's also the message. I think this is a film about slippage and being on the cusp of a new, you know, way of life. And as that happens in the culture, and it happens every so often, where we're at the end of an era of sorts, and everything's changing or everything has changed, and everybody's flailing around. And so the characters in this film are all flailing around. And as they do this, Joaquin Phoenix's character is sort of locked in what my friend Graham referred to as homosocial battle with a, you know, square-headed, old-style authoritarian cop played by Josh Brolin, who is, I gotta say, hilariously tormented through this entire film. And there's this weird sexual tension that goes on, not necessarily between them, but between Josh Brolin and the world. And there's a great character, a deputy DA played by Reese Witherspoon, who is bitter and sarcastic and doesn't like Joaquin Phoenix one bit, except she has sex with him.
I like your description of her in your review as the human equivalent of cigarette smoke in your face.
So this is a freaky, stoned kind of movie about the world changing. There's a title card in the film that quotes some graffiti that was found on a wall in Paris in 1968, which is when the big social revolution and the student and the worker protests happened. And it said, "Under the paving stones, the beach." Now, this takes place in a beach community. But I like that idea of two forces pressing against each other until one of them cracks. And the cement is what will crack. And things will give way. And that is what I believe this film is about. Although, plot-wise, you wouldn't get that just from, you know, point A to point B to point B to point C to point F to point N to point Q to point T to point R, which is how it unfolds. And
to point six to point rutabaga.
Yeah. So, the beauty of it here, I think, is also reflected in the way it looks. It looks like a 44-year-old movie. It was shot by Robert Elswit on film in this really just gorgeous, grainy, washed out, you know, shot, washed out, you know, look. And every shot is just beautiful. And you get so much just from light and from texture and from gestures and from glances. And again, the dialogue is mostly about, well, then he did this and then she did that, and this guy over here works for a drug cartel. And again, that's not where you're going to get the meaning from in this movie. You're going to get it from the weird, funny, freaked out stuff that's packed in all the frames of this movie.
Did you guys live in Los Angeles, like, in this time period?
No, I was a child in the Northeast.
But
I love this movie. I can't wait to see it again. I could watch it with the sound down and have as much pleasure as I did with the sound up.
I might have enjoyed it more with the sound down, frankly, because I did like...
Why don't you try it that way?
I did like looking at it, and I agree with what you're saying in terms of what this movie's about and what it sets out to do and how it sets out to do it. But, brother, I had few film experiences this year that were as agonizing, where I just literally felt like if I were wearing a watch, I would have kept checking it, because it has, there's no story momentum, except that things get more and more dense and complicated. It felt to me like every scene of the movie could have well been the last scene in the movie. You know, there's no, it's not going anywhere. It makes you feel like you've been slipped a Mickey. Like your brain can't take it all in, and you are high and cannot deal with this movie.
As a person who does not use drugs, I appreciate that.
So, I mean, I admire what Anderson is setting out to do, and I fully acknowledge that there are going to be people out there for whom this movie works and for whom it says something. I was not one of those people.
It's even in keeping with his earlier films, because the that thematic element of
the end of an era,
time moving forward, and who's going to get left behind and who's going to move into the future,
right?
And how will they live their lives?
Yeah,
that's in the Boogie Nights. That's There Will Be Blood. That's The Master.
Yeah,
and now this.
I have to say, I am not fully Team Anderson.
I am.
I think that his only, like, 100% unalloyed masterpiece is There Will Be Blood. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in The Master and in Magnolia and in Boogie Nights. I haven't seen Sydney and I haven't seen Punch Drunk Love. And even in this one, I would say there are interesting elements and there are, you know, there are cool visual choices and performances. But I just was squirming and uncomfortable and bored and confused, and just looking over at Gray, who was sitting next to me at the screening I went to, and she was equally just like, what are we watching?
Well, you're both twin dummies.
Well, you know,
how you like that? Like,
the Lemires backed me up on this one, and Matt Atchity, and
all of you.
A lot of people on my Facebook wall are like, the worst.
Everyone's so wrong.
I'm not saying the worst, because this is clearly not the work of someone who's phoning it in. I mean, this is obviously, you know, his stuff is so meticulous that I, you know, clearly an effort is being made, and there are moments where that effort pays off. But for me, for the most part, this was just super unpleasant.
Two and a half hours. I'm sorry.
So for you, is that like not even an uninteresting failure? It's not even an interesting failure? It's just like a failure flat out?
It's no, I mean, I would say, okay, I'll go interesting failure. Okay. Sure. Yeah, because again, it's like, for me, a failure is when clearly nobody cared and nobody tried and it was just, we'll do this thing. Obviously, he cares a lot. And obviously, he's going for something here. I just don't think he got to where he was going to. To me, this felt like, as much as, in the way that Boogie Nights kind of got on my nerves, because it felt to me like an Altman movie that abruptly turns into a Scorsese movie, specifically abruptly turns into Goodfellas, this one felt to me like he was trying to do The Long Goodbye. And I don't even like The Long Goodbye that much, which I know puts me way in the minority. But so it just, I was not having it. But yeah, I'll totally go interesting failure. And I'm right.
Cinema. That is what this is.
And then I have finally caught up, Dave has not, on The Babadook.
Right.
Or as we have been calling it, we need to talk about Drop Dead Fred. and Ingu,
can you guys talk about this movie in a
without,
way
we won't spoil
without
it
killing it for me? Because I still have to watch it.
No.
All right, go.
Yes.
Begin.
Why don't you explain what it's about?
I'll sit here quietly.
Okay, so The Babadook is a horror movie about a mother and her six-year-old son. And the very first scene of the movie has, like, that mother who is pregnant on the way to the hospital when there is a truck that sort of, like, slams into her car, which is carrying her husband. And so it's only her and her son, and her son is, like, nightmare son. But I think to the film's a very enormous credit, a really believable nightmare of a kid, and that you could totally see that kid like being on Ritalin, like an almost fatal dose of Ritalin, because like so much Ritalin. And you know, like he'll sort of like shove like another kid like out of a treehouse so that she falls and like, you know, breaks her nose. But that's also sort of like a really believable thing for a kid to do, to like not have this idea that like, oh, you can't like push a little
girl.
There are consequences. Yeah. And so what happens is she gets this really beautifully bound paper book. It's a pop-up children's book. about this monster called the Babadook. And it's sort of this, like, Edward Gorey-esque Victorian monster who sort of looks like a human person but has this, like, weird, like, blobby, like, dough of a face. And it's talking about how the Babadook is going to come kill them. And you're sort of like, okay, well, that's a terrible gift.
And so, I want this book.
Yeah. And she doesn't know how, you know, it came. And the son truly believes that the Babadook exists, even though she doesn't even finish reading the book for him. Mm. And so he talks about the Babadook and how it's going to come kill them all the time. And she's just sort of like, oh, like, you need to shut up right now. And he, because he's such a nightmare kid, he gets suspended from school. And so for the second, for, like, in acts 2 and 3 of the movie, it's just like the two of them stuck in that house driving each other crazy, with him being like, oh, we're going to die, and her being like, no, we're not going to die, but, like, maybe we actually are going to die because you're driving me insane.
It's in the way that, you know, what Nightmare on Elm Street was for teens in terms of the, I can't sleep. This is for single mothers, which is, oh my god, I just want some sleep!
There's, like, a part really early in the movie that I really loved where she, like, finally puts him down and, like, crawls into bed. Just, like, you can see her relax.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she takes out a vibrator, which you don't see, you know, it's, like, under the covers. And she's just, like, you can tell, like, she's, like, on the verge of adult things.
Yes.
Which, you know, we're keeping it clean
adult,
here.
Adult pleasures.
Full release.
And then her son comes in. And just, like, you're just sort of like, oh my god, this poor woman can't even, like, do this for herself.
There's one moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so great, this movie, because it really kind of, it brings you into this premise step by step in such a believable way that there aren't any sort of giant leaps of logic that you're required to take. And it touches so well, I think, on both kind of childhood fears of, like, the boogeyman and of your parents not loving you anymore, and then of adult fears of not being a good enough parent and not getting enough sleep and not, you know, like, there's a scene where, you know, she's at this kid's birthday party and, like, the other moms are so clearly not going to be supportive because, like, her kid's a terror and they're all sort of, you know, too posh and too, you know, oh, I can barely find time to go to the gym.
You know? And I love the fact that the main character, I mean, she works at this, like, old people care facility, and so you can tell that, like, if her 9-to-5 job is taking care of other people and then she has to come home and do that even more, like, how much of yourself can you really give to other people when, you know, she can't even have an orgasm. And so I just, like, love the fact that, like, you could tell that the only reason why all of the stuff is happening to her is just because, like, there's no support system for her. And it's not, like, an overly, like, political movie, really, but you can tell that, like, there's important things being said.
Yes. Yeah, no, definitely. I was really blown away by it. It's a first-time filmmaker named Jennifer Kent, who wrote and directed, and I don't know anything about her. I don't know if she came from shorts or music videos or what, but I mean, she totally has her game going. I mean, just the look of this film is really striking. The performances are terrific. I really, really highly recommend this movie. Is it on demand or is it just?
It's been on demand since November.
Okay, yeah, so it's on demand. So if you're in the U.S., you can see this movie.
Yeah,
yeah. I highly recommend it. It was on my short list of things that I felt like I needed to see before writing my top 10 list, and I'm glad I did because it is. And it's. You know, one thing that struck me during the movie, there's a long period of the they have a dog in the house. And because this is a horror movie, you know, you're led to think that perhaps something's going to happen to the dog. And it makes me crazy that people are so uptight about cats in movies. Like, I knew people who wouldn't go see Inside Llewyn Davis until I assured them that nothing bad happened to the cat. But you can do stuff to dogs in movies and no one cares.
Right. I cared so much.
Yes, me too. And I was like, okay, where are the people speaking for the dogs? That's what I'm saying.
Have you seen this, like, new trailer for a movie called White God? I think it's, like, a Scandinavian movie. I don't remember.
Where the dogs, Planet of the Apes, but dogs take over?
Yes.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow, no.
And so you can, like, it kind of seems like the main character of the movie might be, like, the dog. Basically, the dog is, like, a mutt, and for some reason, this is, like, not okay. It's not, like, you know, like, a dangerous a quote-unquote dangerous breed either. It's a sort of like this normal-looking dog, and it gets abandoned by its family because the father would have to pay extra money to keep it around. And so the dog gets abandoned and then joins this, like, pack of, like, wild roving dogs, and then they sort of, like, try to, like, take over the town or something. Anyway, the point is, just, like, in those 2 minutes, you feel so enormously for the dog, and I don't think that I will watch the movie unless I am assured that there is, like, no dog death in that movie, which makes me sound like such a wuss, but I don't care.
Yeah, it's very, it's difficult, and I just, but I, you know, again, I just, I don't have that feeling for cats, and it's, the cat people are so serious about this in movies.
So are you, like, okay if, like, a cat dies?
I'm not okay with it, as I mean, it's still, it's horrifying, but I mean, I won't, the most recent one was Inside Llewyn Davis, but on a periodic basis, there's some movie where there's a cat in peril, and I know so many people who will just say, oh, I can't, oh, no, I can't, right. Even not if all of the cat. Like, eh, but no one, but I, you're the first one I've ever had say this same thing about a dog. Like, generally people are like,
well,
eh,
I have
the dog,
a dog,
whatever.
So, I think, like, I want to say one thing about, like, the Babadook, because I feel like it wouldn't be spoiling it too much. So, sorry. So when she gets this book, what she does with it, and you see this in the trailer, is that she gets so enraged at the book and also so enraged at the fact that her son is talking about it nonstop that she just, like, burns that book, you know? And then the book comes back. Mm. And the book has even more pages and more words. And then the pop-up images are actually even creepier. And they sort of, like, move around.
And specific.
And the pop-up basically has, like, her in it and says, like, she will do these, like, terrible things, some of them involving the dog. And that's when I think the movie starts to get really going, because you're not just afraid for her, which is, I think, what the trailer makes it look like. You're also afraid, like,
for her.
Yes, exactly. You're afraid of her and, like, what she might do. And also for her, because, like, you don't, you know, she's not this, like, villain person.
No.
And she doesn't deserve to do these terrible things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, under the sway of the Babadook. Yeah, it's, yeah, I'm not gonna, I don't want to tell you too much.
I can't wait to send this DVD to my niece, Meg.
How old is she?
She's a new mom.
She's 28 and loves horror movies and is a new mom. So this will be perfect for her.
This is perfect for her.
Yeah.
You should send her this in Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah. Give her a trigger warning at least. Is that it?
That's it.
Really?
And we don't have any letters.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of essays, which we appreciate.
Thank you.
So keep those coming. Just as a quick reminder.
There are three essay contests going
now. For our three prizes.
The rules are 25 words or less on one of the following topics. If you want to win the Apocalypse Now Redux
DVD.
Box DVD thingy that we have, that was it was given to the show just to give away. Your essay subject for 25 words or less is, what do you love most about war? If you are interested in winning one of the two Birdman items, the first one is a limited edition poster.
Mm-hmm.
That it looks like it's a silkscreen limited edition poster. Your essay topic, again, 25 words or less. What bird do you like the best? Finally, if you want the apparently incredibly pricey and valuable Birdman resin sculpture...
That
action
talks.
Figure that we were given that apparently talks. I haven't heard it talking, but also my understanding very limited, and people are flipping it on eBay for hundreds of dollars now. We will not be doing that. We will be giving it to you. You can flip it on eBay for hundreds of dollars if you
or
choose.
Or not. Not our business.
The essay topic, 25 words or less, although I'll understand if you need more. than 24 words or less, is why am I, Dave White, so great? Please continue sending in these essays, and we're going to announce a winner next week at Christmas.
@gmail.com. This show is sponsored by our very
good
friend.
Oh, yeah. Did he send new copy?
He did not send new copy this week. I don't know if he... I think I told him we were taping early this week.
All right.
If not, we will...
Reed Martin, The Real Truth. Everything you need to know about making a new film.
Everything you didn't know you needed to know.
Everything you didn't know you needed to know. Everything you did not know that you needed to know
about
that you should know about making an independent film. The Real Truth. R-E-E. R-E-E-L, like reels, like films, the way, because, you know, they used to make these with film.
Published by Faber and Faber, Faber and Faber.
Faber and Faber.
However you say it.
Farter and Farter.
And yeah, this is the book that will answer all your 500 questions.
500 pages, so thick.
About budgeting, about contracts, about shooting, about editing, about post, about making deals. And he talked to tons of people. He talked to Werner Herzog and Kimberly Pierce and...
got a free copy.
Lee
Who
Daniels
wants one?
And a whole bunch of people.
You don't even have to write an essay. First person to say, I want the copy of The Real Truth that you guys have. We got a copy for you.
All right.
It's free. First person. All you got to do is be the first person to email and say, yeah, send me that book.
And then tell
no
us.
No essays. Just, you need a book?
If you want
a book
if
for
you. If
you
want to tell us after the fact how awesome it was and maybe how it you, helped yeah. you in your fulfill your when dreams of
reading
making
it.
An independent film, that would be great. But in the meantime, yes, we'll give one away. But if not, go buy the thing. It's really great.
Where Skunk, dude, do you have this book? I know you're listening. Would you like a copy? Get us a hold of us.
These are,
get a hold
these
of
are
us.
Questions you need answered.
Yeah. You don't want to ruin your Where Skunks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, The Real Truth, Everything
You
Didn't Know
money.
You Needed to Know About Making an Independent Film by Reed Martin, published by Faber & Faber. It's a proud sponsor of this program, and we thank him.
The
for
only
that.
Sponsor of this program.
At the moment.
The ongoing, most persistent sponsor of this program.
Bless him.
Who clearly does not listen to this program, or else he would withdraw his sponsorship immediately.
I get very specific emails from him thanking us for our... Yes.
And he still likes it and still wants sponsorship.
He's all about
that. That amazes me.
It's a fine, fine book, and people should own it.
It is a fine, fine
book.
It's
a fine, fine podcast.
It's a,
thank you.
It's a, this podcast is whatever.
We'll do.
And we are up to the task of whatever. Reed Martin, we don't deserve him.
No, we don't. What's your DVD pick this week?
Oh, I already told you. Yeah, the Counselor.
Counselor, right.
You should have already stopped this podcast, watched The Counselor, and then come back to finish listening to this podcast. That's what you should have done.
Ingu, do you want to share one?
I really recommend Calvary. That's C-A-L-V-A-R-Y, which is I discovered yesterday. If you want to talk about a bunch of horses, it's C-A-V-A-L-R-Y.
That's the cavalry. That's the cavalry.
Cavalry.
So, Calvary.
It's a Jesus thing.
Yes, it's a Jesus thing. And it stars Brendan Gleeson.
That's where they crucified Jesus.
Yes. And so basically, the thing that I really loved about this movie, other than Brendan Gleeson's amazing performance as a rural Irish priest, is that it's about this like very, I think, wonderful, quote-unquote wonderful dilemma, or very rich dilemma, about a man who is a really good person, but he's stuck in this like very corrupt institution, which is the Catholic Church. And so because all of his neighbors and fellow townspeople are constantly like, oh, like, well, you're a priest, so you must be a pedophile. It's a lot about like him sort of like trying to navigate, like, I am a good person, but how do I convince other people that like this institution that I am inherently a part of does not define me.
Right.
And also, you know, he gets a death threat, but
yes.
Meh.
I was less of a fan of that movie, and it's been so long since I've seen it, I don't even remember what it was that bugged me about it, but I'll, if you put Duraldi Cavalry in Google, you
not
can Calvary. Find my...
Cavalry.
I said Calvary.
You said Cavalry.
I did not.
Yes, you did.
You did.
Okay, fine. Duraldi Cavalry in Google, so you don't want to read about all my horse exploits. You can find my review on the wrap. My DVD pick this week is Slaughterhouse-Five because, like Inherent Vice, it was considered an unfilmable novel, and I think it captures the time jumping and the other sort of complicated issues of the Kurt Vonnegut book really well. It's made by one of my favorite undersung American filmmakers, George Roy Hill, and so if you've ever seen it, it's worth checking out. It's pretty great.
Listen to all the other podcasts.
Wait, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. We haven't talked about merch.
Oh, yeah. Here's what we have.
Yeah, we're down. We are scraping bottom.
We're scraping the bottom of our merchandise stores. vamp for 10 seconds.
Okay.
And I will tell everyone what
One thing that we have in unlimited supply is our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes.
Yes.
Our current one for the holiday season is the Mexican Santa Claus from 1959. We do a full episode on that show, on that movie, which you can listen to while you're watching the movie or just enjoy it, you know, the way you listen to a regular episode. Those extra shows are only $1.99. You can get them by PayPaling us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We currently have Santa Claus and our other holiday choice, White Christmas from last year, or you could check out our commentary tracks for The Apple, Clue, Josie and the Pussycats, and Two for the Road. There's also, of course, our fabulous Linoleum Knife t-shirts, which are
in
rather short supply at the moment.
I'll
what do we have
exactly,
left?
I'll tell you exactly what we got. Three of you fatties. We got three extra larges left.
Mm-hmm.
Are you extra large?
Then you are extra right for this shirt.
There you go. Do you have $20? Do you have PayPal? You can have
a
t-shirt.
Do you have a mailing address?
Yeah. There's one medium.
Okay.
Are you neither large nor small? This is for you.
Are you Patricia Arquette?
There are two small ones.
She was on medium, right?
Are you petite? Little? Are you a little person? Wee?
Are you a mere slip of a girl?
Diminutive. Or man.
Or gent.
Maybe you're a small man. We have two of those.
Small.
That's it.
So
two smalls, one medium, three XLs.
Three XLs. Okay. So if you want to snap up one of the remaining shirts, PayPal is $20 if you live in the United States. Extra if you live elsewhere.
We have a copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas left.
Okay. Also $20 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
There is the possibility that more will show up.
We'll announce it on our Facebook page if we get more copies.
Yeah,
but at
but
the moment,
currently
we're down to
the we
last
have
one.
A copy left.
So if you
don't
order,
be shy.
If you order and we don't have one,
ask.
We will tell you. Just cause, especially if you're trying to get it before Christmas. But anyway, so if you want a T-shirt or a book, if you're in the United States, it's $20. If it's more, if you're outside. PayPal linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you include your mailing address. If you're buying a book, tell us how you want the book signed and to whom. If you're getting a shirt, tell us what size you want. These are Hanes 100% cotton beefy tees. And again, we are down to two smalls, one medium, and three XLs.
And if you're buying the book, the $20 that you're spending on the book gets you the what we are referring to as the deluxe edition.
That's right.
It's got things in it.
Yes.
Delightful Christmas items.
Yes.
Like tuck, Alonzo's mustache.
Tucked into the pages.
And we'll
of
and,
this
and,
book.
And we gift wrap.
And we gift wrap it. So it's like you get it in the mail, it's gift wrapped, you put it under your tree on Christmas Day, you open it and you're like, who could this be from? Oh look, it's from Linoleum Knife, my favorite podcast of the cinema.
Or if you wanted to send it as a gift, we will mail it off.
A gift.
A gift. As a gift, we will mail it to that person so you can be all like, all right, well that's done.
Yeah.
And they'll open it.
And the
and
person
get a great
who opens
book.
It'll be like, "What's a linoleum knife?"
They'll get this lovely book and all kinds of.
Oh,
cool
look!
Little,
I'm getting a book about Christmas movies on Christmas Day. It's useless to me now.
Plenty of time to research and prep for next
year. You got a whole year.
You know what? I think, according to the charts, I think my biggest sales day
is
every year
Christmas
is Christmas
day.
Day.
That's so weird to me.
Yeah,
I don't understand that at all.
People are really feeling it. You know.
Yeah.
So check out our friends on the... Oh, wait, before we do that, we want to thank our lovely guest, Ingu Kang, for joining
Kang.
Us.
Kang!
Kang. Where can people find you online, Ingu?
At The Rap and The Village Voice and IndieWire.
Do you like strangers following you on Twitter?
I love it. Please do that. But don't follow me in real life or I will cut you. I am on Twitter at... Thinkovision, one word.
That's right, at Thinkovision.
What a
Thinkovision.
Do I follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, I don't know, you should.
Hang on.
Thinkovision. I'm at Aduraldi, Aduralde, and Dave is at D. Leland White. And of course, you can follow the show at Linoleum Cast.
I do follow you on Twitter, Ingo.
Better.
Thinkovision.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, as always, we thank you for listening, and we urge you to check out our friends online. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast with Matt and Gray, the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, I should have my list in front of me, and I never.
But you don't. The end.
We want to thank Blue for our theme music, of course. Check out the Brady Stanellis podcast. Like our Facebook page. Join our Facebook group page where our listeners hang out and chat with each other, and we pipe in occasionally as well. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've been taking our oldest episodes and turning them into YouTube videos. You can subscribe to the show at iTunes. Please, please, please leave us a 5-star review there. It does help people find the show, and a lot of you have been doing that, and that's so great, and we do really, really appreciate it. You can stream this program on the Facebook page or via Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com, and you can also give us a little thumbs up or whatever on if you're doing that. And again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your essays. Send us your questions and comments and lists. And your money is always very much appreciated. No. And yeah, so this has been lovely. And,
I mean, you get things in return of course. For money.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah. So anyway, Ingu, thanks for joining us. And did you have were you saying something?
But money.
Okay, yes, fine. Yeah.
They're whores.
That's right. That is correct.
We will catch you next time.
Goodbye.